What's up, everyone? You're tuning in to Before the Whistle podcast. This is a newer podcast coming out of Toronto, Canada, where we discuss sports. I'm your host, Matt Costa, here with
Andrew Costa.
What's going on, everybody? So I'm going to get this out of the way nice and early and quickly. You can follow us on our Twitter at BFW Podcast. You can also find our podcast on iTunes if you have an Apple product. You can also find us on Podomatic, beforethewhistle.podomatic.com. If you care to get more intimate with me and Andrew, you can follow Andrew at AndrewCosta84 and me at Costa_Matt. How's your week been, dude?
It's been good.
Yeah, it was a good sports weekend. Like, everything's starting to kick off. It's kind of getting to that great point in sports. You got the MLB kicking off very soon.
Grapefruit League's underway, which is awesome.
Yep, MLS just started, which is always awesome and nice. And UFC last night. There was a big UFC game.
Yeah, it was a good pay-per-view.
Yeah, we just finished watching the TFC game. So I guess we can start there and discuss about that. They beat the New York Red Bulls 2-0 in a game that they really didn't look like they deserved to win.
I caught in midway through the second. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't watch the first half, but they did not look good up until at least the 80th minute. I just saw it was a matter of time until New York scored. And I just, like, Wright Phillips had an opportunity, and he just did not bury it. And, you know, you think if they go down 1-0 at that point, there's no coming back. It's just one of those classic sit back and wait for that counter opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, good ball from Giovinco in, created the penalty, and then...
Did you think that was a penalty?
It did, because you came in from behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a little bit soft on the replay. I'm surprised they gave it to him just, you know, from where the position of the ref was, but it looked like the linesman was the one that made the call. Yeah. It was a foul. I mean, but that's always... I mean, you could have a whole podcast on is it or isn't it. That's what we should do. A whole podcast on is it or isn't it a penalty.
Yeah, well, it would never end because everyone will have a different opinion and a different view on it.
Yeah, I mean, by letter of the law, yes. There was an infraction in the box. He came in from behind, took out the legs of, who was it?
The winger. I can't remember his name.
Japanese player, correct? Yeah.
But you see, you say that the letter of the law, and I find that humorous because according to the letter of the law, there's a lot more fouls and yellow cards that should be given out that aren't given out regularly. So is letter of the law really apply to anything anymore? Because, like, you look back at some of the most iconic games, like 2010 World Cup, we always mention.
It was Endo, by the way.
There
Endo,
you go.
He got fouled, sorry.
But the 2010 World Cup, De Jong high-footed Alonso, and that should have been a red card.
Referee's discretion, but I guess it was roundhouse rules, roadhouse rules.
Seriously, though, and that's the problem. You always hear that referee's discretion. The ref's discretion is always talked about. They always bring it up. It's kind of annoying when you have to think about it because there's no consistency from one game to the next game. One game you have A, which happens to be a foul, and then B, which is the same thing that A happened, the A foul, and it's not a foul anymore.
It's tough, and it's because of the human side of the game and the ref way it's officiated. I guess the closest parallel to that would be the umpire in baseball with the strike zone. You'll get certain umpires that have a strike zone set out a specific way, and that's their strike zone. And then you'll have other umpires which are more generous or stricter.
For sure.
Much like refs. I mean, you know what you're going to get with a specific ref in soccer,
like,
or
Mark
football.
Atkinson.
Mark he's the top most red cards right now, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and you saw it today in the Manchester United game, Juan Mata within 10 minutes got sent off. You should know going into the game. I mean, I hate to say this, and maybe it's that wrong tactic, but if I'm a manager prepping my team, I'm going to be vetting the players on who the ref is and kind of calls they like to make, so you know what to look for when you're out on the field, when to go down.
It's part of the game. It's a full-on,
you know, I'm not for diving, don't get me wrong, and I'm not saying to dive, but you know that there are players that like to embellish, and if the ref's not going to have any of it because he systematically does not, you're going to tell your specific players that are known for going down a little bit easier, you stay on your damn feet.
Yeah, well, you should always stand your damn feet, but I understand the diving element.
Well, at some points, it's very tactical, too. Again, we could have another podcast on that. If you're taking something a little bit harder and you're fighting to stay up and you know that you're going to win a free kick or a set piece in a good area, I mean, sometimes just hit the floor because you've got to help your team out.
It's a tactical advantage doing it at the right times. You pick your spots. You can know you can go down. You can slow the game down, get a free kick, why not go for it?
Well, right? Exactly. And part of that is knowing who the ref is.
Yeah, you just got to be good at it. You got to know how to sell the dive. You can't make it a blatant non-foul. Well, you got to go down lightly. Make sure there's contact and then go down.
Well, yeah, I know the ref. And in this case, the ref
gave TSC a favorable call.
Very generous penalty. And I saw when Giovinco was lining it up, I just said, you know, they don't deserve to win this game up to that point. But then they go and score the second on a beautiful counterattack. And maybe that's the TFC we're going to see this year. Sit back, strong on the defensive side of the ball. Not a team. I mean, let's face it. We, outside of Giovinco and Bradley, we don't have a lot of on-ball talent.
No, Osorio's not bad. You have Jose Altidore
when he's healthy, but you can't rely on him. He's the worst designated player you can have, just in the sense that value per game is just not there with him.
And it's weird because he'll have a week or three where he's fantastic and he's netting in a goal or two, maybe even picking up a hat trick. And then he goes down for 2 months because his hamstrings. Like, he has the worst hamstrings in the entire world of sports.
Yeah, and then you break down his goal per game ratio. You can get the same thing and have an extra body every week, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Depth is going to be key, especially going down the stretch. And you got to think, too, when the international break starts coming around and we lose a lot of players, because we will... I would not be surprised if Giovinco gets a call-up. Oh, if he gets a call-up to the Euros on that Italian squad, what's going to happen? Oh, that's the heartbeat of the TFC.
He'll likely get a
the
call.
Copa America, I'm not 100% sure this year. Are they doing the invitations with the U.S.?
The U.S.
So Bradley's gone. If Altidore's fit and healthy, you know he's going to be on the U.S. national squad.
Mm-hmm. You're looking at a different...
You're losing all your DPs.
Right? That's just it. Now, speaking of that... Last year, the TFC finally made their first playoff appearance in inception.
In theory, yes. Finished in the exact same position they did the year before. We just have an expanded one-off
playoff
home and away playoff game. So, and I still don't qualify that as success.
It's not.
You're being... For me to be considering
it's a pat
it
a on playoff, the back. Yeah, it's literally a pat on the back.
Hey, you guys, come on, it's okay.
It's the award medal for participation.
Yeah, it's a participation award. That's exactly what it is. I just, you know, I don't like to say that they've had playoff success yet.
No, definitely not.
Or first time making the playoff. For me, that wasn't really. It was kind of like a qualifier to make the World Cup, one of the playoff rounds. That's what it was like. Absolutely. It's like you're not there yet. You have to go through this.
You're floating
round.
Around now. At some point, should Toronto fans start to embrace this team more so than they do, because we had the best season in franchise history last year, but it seemed that they were completely pushed to the side because the Jays took over. You have the Raptors doing well. The Leafs are a total gong show as what's supposed to happen. Toronto...
The Leafs are doing what they should be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but you're right. I think TIA fans should definitely be paying attention to this. I mean, the stadium now is getting quite the upgrade.
Yeah, they're finally going to cover it. So
it's a competitive team. They're no longer a joke. They're worth watching. I know if I'm going to a game, even today, where they didn't play particularly well, they got the result. And if I'm a fan that paid money for that, I'm going home with a 2-0 win. Because at the end of the day, in July, we're going to look back at the time we went to New York for the first time and won. And asses handed to us, but scraped away with a 2-0 victory.
And to think about it, they're going to be away from home for the next couple weeks.
Eight weeks,
they're not done renovations with
the
stadium yet, right?
But that's good because they'll have a good home run as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. It's great for the... I think it's great to be in the city, especially in the summer when you've got... Well, even this time of year, you've got the Raptors, which are killing it.
Yeah.
They're only, what, 2.5 games back?
I think they're 2 games
back.
They're
2 games
still.
Now? Okay, yeah. So you got them. They're just back of first in the East, not just the division.
Yeah, there's
it's
a
crazy.
Lot of
they're already, the division's a lock. And it's
yeah,
like,
it's over with
How often, as a sports fan in Toronto, are you like, oh yeah, division's a lock. We're talking about conference first. I mean, last time we saw that was last year with the Jays.
Yes.
And again, they've been losing for so long. And really, they're the most recent team with success in the city because of the 90s World Series.
The Jays, yeah, and it's funny that you talk about the division being a lock. It seems that the Raptors are the most boring sports team in Toronto. Like, nobody talks about them, and it doesn't seem to have that lust that the Jays have after that magical run last year. And we keep mentioning it, but for anyone that wasn't in the city or wasn't in Toronto, it was all Blue Jays. Everything, it was insane.
Across Canada,
just across Canada. But now the Raptors are technically the best record team and the best performing team we have.
Their home record's phenomenal.
Yeah, they're 11 or 12 wins, yeah, at home. But no one brings them up and says, hey man, we got to pay attention to the Raptors. It seems just like There's very a big amount of caution towards this team because of recent playoff failure.
The problem with it is, and this is where basketball is an interesting sport. Your playoffs are, it's a game of two seasons, playoff ball and season ball, and it's just,
yeah, it's totally different.
I mean, we went, what was it? We swept. Who did we sweep? It was Washington in the
regular season.
In the regular season, in the playoffs, we could not get a close game yet. Yeah. Alone.
Well, there was a lot to that season. I think a lot of people forgot that DeMar DeRozan going down really hurt the team for that extended period, and Kyle Lowry really put the team on his shoulders and was keeping the team afloat during that period where DeMar DeRozan wasn't around. And then come playoff time, it just seemed like Kyle had nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, and that's the depth wasn't what we have now. And
it isn't.
Looking forward too, you guys. I'm just excited for when DeMarre Carroll's healthy. Yeah, that's gonna be awesome. I can't wait to see what this team looks like with him.
Yeah, and
like it's a great, fully fit Carroll.
And you know what? I wouldn't be upset if they hold on to second, don't even go for first, and rest some of your rest Kyle Lowry when you can, rest DeRozan
again,
when you can.
We've talked about this before, though. It's where the Bulls line up. That's my concern.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Jimmy Butler came back. He had a pretty good game the other night. So we're gonna move on because, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the UFC happened this weekend, and it was a pretty big fight. The notorious Conor McGregor was showing up to fight Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
And he jumped up two weight classes. Now, the result was kind of surprising, and by kind of, I mean very. I had no...
Please, let's be honest here.
Yeah, I had no expectations that Diaz would even upset McGregor. I thought McGregor had this, especially after the Jose Aldo fight. 15 seconds in, calling the fight.
Two weight classes is a big jump. Diaz is a great fighter. I don't think he gets the credit. The problem with Diaz is he's got a mouth. He's inconsistent. He's got a mouth. So he's easy to hate. So it's when somebody's disliked, they're not necessarily feared. And because he's not consistently winning,
no, he's
just
up and
generally
down.
Disliked.
I don't get Diaz, because you're right. He's a very good jiu-jitsu fighter. The guy can take a punch. We got to give credit.
That guy's got an iron face.
He reminds me of Homer Simpson in the boxing episode.
Yeah, yeah. Just the guy can take a beating. Yes. I mean, respect to that. That's a
it's an actual talent.
Yeah, it's an asset to have in the cage
when you're fighting, and he can take a punch. Conor McGregor. It was a good fight. They were trading some bombs. McGregor cut him open, but Diaz landed one solid shot, got McGregor
off
clinical.
His
feet.
Yeah. It was great work by Diaz. And you know, it's too bad because a part of me wants to like the guy and see him really be just. And I know a lot of it's hype for the show, and he's going to say a lot of things.
Yeah,
but
of
like,
course.
When you have that kind of personality, you want to see him more consistent, because if that guy's got that kind of personality and he's winning on a you know, pay-per-view basis, it really would do a lot for this for the UFC to have that kind of, it'd be kind of like your Chuck Liddell days, but with more of the heel aspect to it.
What's the difference between Diaz and McGregor? Because McGregor's, if not maybe worse than Diaz when it comes to talking smack. Like, he's ridiculous with it. Now, McGregor has a better record, but he just lost. Like, why is it that McGregor seems more likable and Diaz seems to be the villain, the heel, as you would say?
It's not so much. There's a way. It's how they talk the trash, I think, is what it is.
Is it because he's Irish?
Yeah, how do you hate the Irish? They have St. Paddy's Day.
He's so funny, man. He was on Business Insider with Diaz, and they were he was yelling at him to go get him a coffee. And they were talking about money, and Conor McGregor's just the most ridiculous fighter. But the other big fight that happened in the card was the Miesha Tate Holly Holm fight. Now that was for the title, and everyone thought that Holly Holm was going to go in and just run show, because Miesha lost to Ronda within 15 seconds by submission. It didn't go as planned for Holly Holm. She lost in the fifth round to a rear naked choke. Now, what happens moving forward? Because Dana White was licking his chops. He knew he had money in the bag with Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm too, because that was a fight everyone wanted to see. Like, I know they're hyping up John Jones Bones versus Cormier too, but really nobody cares.
No, not this. And it's funny because he said, Dana White at one point said, women will never fight in UFC. And right now it's one of his biggest pay-per-view draws.
Well, Ronda Rousey was massive. Like, that she was the GSP, she was the Matt Hughes till she lost.
It was, I don't know, it's funny because people want parody, they don't want the problem of boxing where you've got, you know, mm-hmm. you know, you're up against weak opposition to build your record. And
then and you fight stuff. An actual contender finally. Yeah, and once you're like 40-3.
Yeah, you know, and this is the difference with this sport. And it's, I mean, draws aside, or not draws, when it goes to the decision aside, I mean, because that's always questionable. Mm-hmm. It's just, with this sport, it's your days of Chuck Liddell. I just think it's over. There's not going to be... You're not going to see title champions go the kind of distances in terms of length of title ship owner, like holding the title.
No, you're definitely not. That. The last one we had was Bones, but John Jones Bones was having too much fun with his nose, and that created an issue. Yeah. And now there's question marks about him, if he's going to be anywhere as good as a fighter he
wants. Well, jail changes a man.
Yeah, it does. Well, he didn't go to jail. He was just suspended from the UFC.
But it's a tough thing to kind of see what's going to happen. I don't know. It's... The thing with this sport, I don't think it's going to ever be the sport where title's really going to define a good fight. It's going to be good line, good matchups. Well-balanced fighters facing off is what it's... I mean, again, yesterday...
The card sucked.
Card wasn't great, but the Diaz fight wasn't a championship fight. It was just built up very well.
It was a good fight.
It was sold very well.
The thing was the results. The thing with the UFC, and as long as it's a shocking result that doesn't go according to plan... It makes it exciting. But the fights outside of them, if you're just dissecting the fights, beside the McGregor fight, even the Miesha Tate fight wasn't that great. She had one good submission attempt in the first or second round, didn't go through, and then it was just feeling each other out for most of it till she finally ended it.
Yeah, well, it's obviously the kind of sport that, I mean, even then you get your boxing matches where majority of your boxing matches...
Just hugging up against the ropes.
It's the defense wins championships, right?
So GSP's literally the perfect example of fighting.
Mayweather's the same thing, counterfighter, right? So it's you're not going to get, again, you don't have your guys with like Liddell who are coming in and dropping
bombs. Just
ready
to throw bombs.
And that's, I mean, a lot of it was the time of UFC when he first got there and he was told, yeah, don't go down. You better stand up and fight. Yeah. And so he just realized he could knock the hell out of everybody in his weight class.
Do you remember Clay Guida, that guy?
I do remember.
That psychotic guy just running in.
Luscious head of hair, that guy.
Yeah, and that guy threw bombs, but he just, another fighter who was never...
Sean Sherk was the same thing. Yeah, that guy just went into war with the... Nobody will touch Don Fry. That guy just used to throw his face. It was his face to stop punches, not his arms.
But that's the thing. The UFC is nowhere close to what it once was, yet we're approaching...
That's the evolution of a sport. You know, it was growing, and I know it was always a tactical sport and fighting's not that, but it was always looked at as a blood sport before, and I think now it's far more...
Well, people,
it's tightened down. Yeah, I mean, people are paying attention to video. They're watching a lot more video. They're training different. They're getting versed in different styles.
That's what it is. I think the big thing is everyone now can wrestle or have some jiu-jitsu.
Yes, and you know, 10 years ago, you'd have a guy that was a really good boxer, and he was okay on the ground, but he focused on what he was good at, not as opposed to... Mm-hmm. Working on a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And then that, again, what GSP was great at, he wasn't particularly excellent at anything, but he was very good at everything else.
Well, he was just a freakishly good wrestler for someone who never really wrestled before. It was kind of weird.
Well, he was also very, I mean, the athletic. Guy's massive, yeah. Too.
He just had no knockout power. But speaking of the UFC, we have UFC 200 coming up in a couple months.
Yeah.
That's going to be a... fairly big event. Now, if you look back,
I hope they do like a legends fight.
I'm hoping
get like Chuck Liddell to fight Randy
Couture. Exactly.
Like let them wear like headgear and stuff to protect their old faces. but that would be awesome. Almost like when they do the Winter Classic, they have the Legends game. Hilarious would that be?
Instead of like an undercard, it's just like a legends card, like, and then
Gracie getting in there, one stretch, cracks his femur or something. That'd be so funny.
Bring out Bob Sapp. Just bring out Bob Sapp for one. Fight, please. But really, there's UFC's 200s coming up, and I can't even tell you who I think would make the card interesting anymore.
No, like, that's true, because I remember when 100 came around, you already knew who was going to be at that pay-per-view. It was a matter of who were they going to fight.
It was, you assumed it was
GSP,
be,
you
Lesnar
knew it was
or
be Lesnar
Silva.
You knew Silva, you knew,
like, there were, those were the three guys that you figured would be on that card for sure. Now you look at it and you go, well, Bones is fighting pretty soon, so you can't have him. Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm can't happen because Holly Holm just fought.
Yeah.
So it leaves up to question. And they haven't even announced it, obviously, because it's so far in advance.
Yeah. It's... It's tough to say.
And you know what the weird thing is? It seems like more people are getting interested in the UFC, and it's actually becoming more popular.
Well, it's always growing.
Yet it's, I find it digressing in terms of entertainment. I don't find it as exciting. Most fights I could care less about.
That's personal. I mean, I'm sure there are people that are still really into the, I mean, and I used to be really into it, and I'm not so much anymore, I can honestly say. But
you know what killed it for me?
There are people that sit and they love to watch it. And I do like a good grappling match. There's been fights that people have called boring that I thought were incredible technical jiu-jitsu battles. And to me, that was exciting. I don't care particularly to see guys standing and throwing punches all fight. I mean, if they're good at it, then sure. But I'd still prefer a boxing match over that.
Well, that's just
so it. It's just, I don't know what to say. It just, it's kind of questionable. But yeah, I can get where you're coming from. It's missing something, I think.
You know what it was for me? It was when they started doing a pay-per-view twice a month. And it seemed like there was a pay-per-view almost every
weekend. Too much, too soon. I used to, it was good when it was Ultimate Fighter. And Ultimate Fighter.
It was Ultimate Fighter. Then they would do UFC Unleashed, where Spike here in Canada.
Yeah, and you saw the old stuff. Old fights. I miss when it was Pride was its separate organization. They had a bunch of world beaters over there.
But that's just Prime. But that's just it. You weren't overexposed and overstimulated, so cards were better. You were having almost a contender, like a number one contender fight, and
that also changed when they started to insure the fighters, because guys would show up to fight really hurt going into those pay-per-views before, and now it's...
That's kind of scary, when you think about it.
Well, like, they would really go into these things damaging their well-being later on, and the insurance, how many good fights were lined up that have had to be recarded because...
Well, then, this one, the guy McGregor was supposed to fight, he backed out because
initially,
he got injured.
So it's just, it's good for the fighters, it's unfortunate for the fans, it's just one of those things you have to work around, that's it.
Yeah. Well,
and there are smarter people in higher positions to do that thinking for me.
I wonder if the UFC will ever get back to that pedigree where there's elite top talent everywhere in every division where you have to watch it. Like another card, like another fighter, like a Liddell or a GSP. Like we have that in McGregor, sort of.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be, but... I don't know. I still miss those days of Liddell, and everybody was saying nobody's going to beat him, and then having those discussions. Everybody misses good boxing.
Yeah, like that was the best when we were just watching the ESPN 30 for 30. Holyfield chasing Tyson. That was amazing. Boxing was at the forefront. It was amazing.
Combat sport. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, talking about things that are amazing, there's a pretty amazing story going on in the EPL that I really think we should talk about, and we'll close off the show talking about this because we can probably go all night, but Leicester City looks to be winning the EPL. As of right now, they've been looking
to win the EPL for most of this season, and I started to take them as a serious contender in January.
See, I didn't. I can't say I was serious.
If you survived that Christmas window, in my opinion, and you're still right in the thick of it, you are a top two contender.
Oh, you're absolutely, you're right. You're spot on. But I just, at some point, a part of me said, okay, this has to come to an end. You have to come back to reality.
And they have a little bit. Vardy isn't scoring every game, but they still got Mahrez, who's incredible.
He came out
of nowhere. Drinkwater's contributing when necessary.
They're getting everyone kind of...
It's a team effort, and they're buying in, they're believing, and Ranieri is a very good manager. Despite where he's come short, he is a very good manager.
He has been, and he's been doing a great job with Leicester, because look at them
yes, credit where credit is due, but the other contenders, your cities, your Arsenals, where are they? They're helping Leicester as much as they are anything else.
Like, this whole season, when you think about it,
except for Arsenal, Arsenal is doing exactly what Arsenal does.
Well, they're literally doing the carbon copy Arsenal thing.
This is their trademark. Yes. Right when they're ready to take a good position, they somehow drop points to teams that they shouldn't be dropping, losing to your Norwiches or even the game against Man United. There's no reason why Arsenal should have lost. To that Manchester United squad.
They're a shade of any United team I've seen in the last 7 years. They're nowhere close to what United has been known for. But even when you look at the season as a whole, Tottenham's in second place. Pochettino has been doing a fantastic job with Tottenham, who seems to be getting no recognition. But like Leicester's in first with 60. You have Tottenham at 55 in second. Arsenal third. with 52, then City at 50, and then West Ham. West Ham's at 49, and then United at 6th.
Payet's been a fantasy point miracle for a lot of people.
Yeah, he has been. He's been great. But even, and then you look at Chelsea, the defending champions are in 10th with 40 points.
They're just an interesting situation.
This season has flipped upside down. It's gone on its head. And everyone always talks about how great of a season or a league England is. The English Premier League is the cream de la creme. They're the team.
Not really. Well, yes and no. Everyone it depends says, on who you ask. Everybody says Spain, but I don't find a league to be all that great when it's three teams, really two teams, and then sometimes you get a third, like you got Atleti the past couple years. Yes. Which,
but in terms of popularity, the English Premier League is the top league, just, right? The quality just hasn't been there, clearly. And
no,
you see it in
not,
Europe.
Not, no, it's not. But at the same time, too, the parity there is incredible. I love the fact that a team that was in relegation zone just made out of relegation zone at the end of last season is ready to lift the title this year. You can't rate that stuff. I mean, that stuff does not happen in Spain. You're not going to have Eibar come in and win against Barcelona or Real Madrid next year.
Celtic Vigo's not going to come in and win the title.
You're just not going to get that stuff. So,
but see, nobody expected...
That's the drama you can't write.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Nobody expected Leicester. No one even expected Tottenham to be sitting second. Like, Tottenham was a lock for fourth.
They're a top four team. They really are. Second, yes. Again, and that comes to
every other team.
City not being
rubbish.
City. And again, announcing a manager change mid-season, that deflates a team. You look at other examples. Euro 2008, Scolari announces that he's going to be leaving Portugal for Chelsea, and the team literally after that announcement went to shit. And then you look at...
How can you play for a coach that you know is leaving? Any authority he has no relevance anymore.
Yeah, and you've got all these players that now, especially with players, and today's players, because they're very sensitive. if a coach is giving you a chance, and you don't really think you would have that chance with any other manager, you know, especially if it's a manager that's only been there a few years... I mean, in this case, the City, Pep's coming in. How many of those City starters are guaranteed their job next year?
I can name two certain, and that's Aguero and Silva. Torres already talked about leaving. He said he's leaving because he doesn't think he's going to get along with Pep Guardiola, or there was something there.
So what does that do to a dressing room?
Oh, absolutely. It makes no sense. When they announced that he was coming in halfway through the season, I was completely confused. It made no sense to me why you would think to add another coach or announce a coach halfway through the season. Now, that being said, what about United? Because they're another team that just makes no sense to me, because you brought in Louis van Gaal after giving David Moyes that one season, and then he comes in, they finish fourth, they make it back into the Champions League, they bow out of the Champions League, out of the group stage, because clearly there's no quality in the squad, or they're clearly not good enough. And yet they're sitting sixth, and they still haven't decided to maybe move on with him or even do what other teams have done and just announced another coach. Like, the season is lost for them, personally. I don't see what good finishing fourth will do for them anymore, besides the kit deal and getting more money from Adidas.
Yeah. I would personally just wait. It's a double-edged sword, because you're going to have the media going crazy all season. And that's going to disrupt. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, you have a coach like Mourinho, who is sitting at home, still in England, that you could clearly get. And there's been tons of rumors and reports about how Mourinho is likely to be the next coach. Why haven't they announced it? Do you think maybe there's a deal in place and they're going to wait till the end of the season?
Well, it could be a situation where they do have a deal in place and there's not a lot of... I mean, you're getting your media rumors going around, but it's not overwhelming, because the big fish is gone, Pep is gone, so it's kind of quiet. So why say anything now?
Well, that's
you don't have to.
Well, there's another reason why I think you need to go after a Mourinho and grab him, because your neighbors just signed arguably the best coach in...
Who's to say they haven't already? And that's what we'll find out in a few weeks' time.
Surely you would have heard about it by now, no?
There's been tons of rumors. There's tons of rumors saying that it's in place already. There's a lot of close sources to Mourinho coming out saying that he's already got an agreement and that he will take over for Manchester United in the next season. We will see for sure if that's all hearsay. Van Gaal says he wants to stay, so it's... I just, again, it's not an everyday front page headline right now. So no. why make it if you don't need to?
Every front page has Leicester on it. But if you're United, would you, and you're a United supporter, as am I, would you, are you not concerned about the Mourinho coming in? Do you want Mourinho
after the showing? They've just shown after two seasons, Van Gaal can't keep players there, can't keep them happy, can't keep the squad fit.
Well, we're suffering from what Arsenal also seems to finish.
Yeah, and it's just, he just doesn't seem to grasp what it takes to win in England, unfortunately. He's a good manager. Coming in with that whole 3-5-1 or 3-5-2, that formation, like, he just got killed at the beginning. Yeah. And he had to turn that around, really shore that up. And I just think somebody like Mourinho, who understands the English game, when the players do listen to him and the players are on with him, it's a different story. And again, yes, United are transitioning, and you've seen some promise from some of the youth squad that are coming up.
Like now, Rashford,
incredible. You know, Pereira is coming around. There's some talent there.
There's there. You have Martial, Varela, who looks very good.
Yes. Yeah, so I just don't know if Van Gaal is going to be the guy to lift the trophy with this team.
I don't think so either, but they need to do something drastic. They need to get a key player. And I know we have Juan Mata, and then he went in and he got those other dudes, Schneiderlin, Schweinsteiger, but it clearly seems not to be enough.
No, it's not. They need more. They need, Depay's been coming around. He's starting to look like the Depay we expected. It's going to take time with this rebuild, and I just don't think Van Gaal's the right guy for the job. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, only time will tell. That's it for this week's episode, everybody. Thanks for listening. Till next time.